What is up, everybody? This is the Sharp Angles Podcast, the recap edition of the Sharp Angles Podcast. I used to say Sunday recap, but we're recording this on Monday night because of the playoff schedule. We wanted to see all the playoff games. In fact, if you're watching this live or you're accustomed to watching us live on Sunday evenings, we're going to start doing this after the final game of the playoffs each of the next 2 weeks. So come and join us over on YouTube. Search Warren Sharp. You'll find the channel. And we're going to be here to talk about all the games, all the playoff games, answer any questions, all that fun stuff. So get in the chat and tell us how dumb we are. I had a lot of bad predictions this week. And so there you'll have plenty of things to criticize me specifically for. But I'm joined tonight by two aggrieved fans of the NFC East, one of them more recently heartbroken than the other, and that is Curtis Hirsch. We'll get to Curtis in a second. He looks joyful. His Cowboys were just embarrassed on national television yesterday, and for some reason he looks joyful. But we're going to go first to Tucker Bagley, whose Eagles were just routed. I think that's a fair way to describe it, routed by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the fighting Baker Mayfields. How are you feeling, Tucker?
Can we talk about the Sixers win instead? And B put up 40 and 10, 16th straight game with 30 and 10 points. Or we can talk about the Flyers. They beat the Blues tonight 4-2.
That's not a real sport. That sport doesn't exist. I don't recognize that sport.
I know I have at least one ally that would disagree with you on this podcast. But yeah, I mean, what we saw the Eagles is what we saw the last 7 weeks, isn't it? I mean, it was more of the same. Since that Bills game, this is who that team is and was. And you know, you laughed at me last week when we talked about Nick Sirianni potentially being on the hot seat. And
I was prepared to eat crow tonight. I'm very prepared to eat crow about that tonight. Because you were right, 100% right.
And now on, you know, in the playoffs, national TV, Monday Night Football, I think it's fair to say his team quit on him, right? The defense didn't show up. I think missed tackles is more often than not just a lack of effort is what we saw today from that offensively. They really just had no answers for the blitz, which is something they haven't had an answer for mostly last year, but especially this year, starting week one when Bill Belichick started blitzing them and everyone kind of followed suit after that. And I think if you're the Eagles and you're Jeff Lurie, and I think when it comes down to situations like this, I try to make it as simple as possible. If Nick Sirianni went into a meeting about his, you know, future with the Eagles or any team, and the question simply put was, what do you do well? I don't know if there's an answer, right? Like he's not good at scheming up an offense. He can't call plays. He had to have that, you know, taken away from him 2 years ago. And that's been handled by the offensive coordinators ever since. And clearly the locker room and the culture that he's established over his 3 years, you know, with the Eagles has completely fallen apart. Like there's zero reason for this guy to get the benefit of the doubt. It's not a normal thing to lose 6-7 and to be this non-competitive for most of that stretch. And I think right now, if Nick Sirianni is still the head coach by, you know, Thursday, Friday, or the next time that we all meet after the divisional rounds, I would be shocked. I really would.
Yeah. And like you said, I pushed back on that last week. I mean, he got to the Super Bowl last year, but I think that you could see that a lot of the talent on the coaching staff went out the door whenever Nick Sirianni and Jonathan Gannon left, based on what we saw from them, their teams this season. Nick Sirianni obviously took it all the way to the brink, didn't end so well, but took it to the brink. Jonathan Gannon, I think we can all agree, overachieved with what he had on that Cardinals team and actually had a decent team once Kyler Murray got back. And you put all that together and you see what we saw this year. And I tweeted this. I'm very confused. Brian Johnson, the offensive coordinator of the Eagles, and to be fair, the Eagles offense was not the main issue. It was a issue, but it was not the main issue that we had with this Eagles team. But he gets like some head coaching interviews. Like he's gotten two or three. It's not just one. And I don't really understand why. I don't know if that's just, again, continuing to be attached to the Eagles, but nothing I've seen from that kind of inability to figure out what to do with the blitz tonight. Jalen Hurts was awful again against the blitz. You go into a game against this defense knowing you're going to get blitz, and they had absolutely no answer for it. It's a fundamental coaching failure on this team, and it seemed pretty clear. And I don't know if they're going to get rid of Sirianni. Like I said, they just got to the Super Bowl last year. Maybe that's an overreaction, but they certainly have to answer a lot of questions. They have to answer the question of who decided to make Matt Patricia the defensive play caller, because that's a really that is a that you're not even hindsighting that decision. Foresight tells you that's going to be an awful decision, and someone did that, and someone has to answer for that. And so there's a lot going on there. Curtis, I guess I'm going to give you a little bit of time here to just gloat a little bit about how happy this has made you. But I think we should talk about the Bucks. We came in talking about the Eagles, and if Bucks fans, if you get mad at us, we came in talking about the Eagles because, you know, that's Tucker's team, and we need to let him vent so he can really get into it. But the Bucks side of this is really impressive. They beat this Eagles team. I would have picked them to win this game if I thought that Baker Mayfield was healthy. He did look healthy in this game, and they won it pretty easily. They're an interesting team going up against the Lions team, another defense that we don't trust. The Bucks are in a really interesting spot here now moving into the second round of the playoffs.
By interesting spot, one they didn't expect at the beginning of the year. And kudos to Absolutely. Them. They ate a lot of dead cap space this year, and they can move forward knowing that they overachieved this year, and they probably do have a shot against the Lions. So we've seen what that defense is capable of on the other side of the ball. So, and the Bucks defense is trending in the right direction as well, but I still don't think they're good enough to beat the Lions. And then we'll get to that team later, but good on them. Baker was great again today. He could have had a monster game if some of his receivers caught the ball. So they got crushed, and they left a lot on the table. They left a lot of meat on the bone out there, but yeah, again, I think this was a Eagles team that quit on their coach, and AJ Brown is nowhere to be found. There's no way you can have one of those two guys back, and I'm keeping the Pro Bowl receiver if I have to choose between one of the two.
We had some people actually, because Tucker has talked about that before. We had some people push back with some comments that AJ Brown made in, you know, to the press about, you know, kind of being on the same side with Sirianni. So I'm not close enough to that situation to know, but It is interesting, kind of the whole thing that happened with AJ Brown's social media accounts this week. And they could say that it was just kind of like, hey, a routine thing. They were doing something. And maybe it was. This happens a lot with specifically NFL wide receivers. If you ever want a great laugh, go find a Denny Carter tweet about the way that wide receivers react on social media. But yeah, so like it seems like there's something there. It seems like there's something wrong in that team. And Tucker, I think you really made the point that the tackling that we saw tonight that's not a talent thing. That's not a you weren't in the right spot thing. That's a just, I don't really care kind of thing. And that's tough to explain away as a coach. I guess, you know, turnabout's fair play. If we're talking about the Eagles and their failures, it only makes sense, Curtis, to go right to your Cowboys and what happened to them against the Packers. Jordan Love was very good in this game. Great. We'll talk about the Packers here in a second. But just like we did with the Eagles, I'm going to give Curtis a chance here to talk a little bit about his Cowboys, a Cowboys team that still somehow has not fired Mike McCarthy when we're recording this on Monday night. And I'm not sure how that's possible.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm less down about that than I probably have been in the past. I know that they were one of the better teams in the NFC, but they still weren't good. If you look at all the metrics, this is a year where all the teams with a lot of talent are in the other conference. The Cowboys, if you look at that defense, it had been trending horribly, even though they'd been playing not very good offenses, and they were living by the turnover. And yesterday the Packers absolutely owned them, and Dan Quinn didn't have an answer. He hasn't ever had an answer for the Kyle Shanahan run offense, and he didn't yesterday. So it is what it is. They were the best of a bunch of bad teams outside of the 49ers, I think, in the NFC, but what kind of compliment is that anyways? So good riddance to Mike McCarthy. If they don't move on from him, I don't think I can be a fan anymore. We'll go from there.
Yeah.
And Dak needs to be better at some point in time. And I don't hate Dak, but at some point he has to put the team on his shoulders and win a game. And never really saw if anything came out, what him and CeeDee Lamb were, why they weren't on the same page early on in the game or what was going on there. But at some point, if he wants to be considered one of the league's best, he's got to put the team on his shoulders and win a big game.
That's true. But I mean, like, they didn't put him in a good position either with the game plan. And so it's hard. Like, how angry are you going to get at if they're going to come out and just kind of like dawdle through the first quarter and end up in a bit of a hole, then how angry can you get at Dak?
Yeah, it's agreed. Rico Dowdle on second and 10 multiple times in the first quarter. Like, what are we doing?
I didn't even mean that pun. So there you go. That is perfect. Yeah. Like I don't know how much you can put on Dak, and I'm not going to revisionist history and go back and say, you know, he had 400 yards. Yeah. He obviously played well. Like, that's revisionist history. That is not what we saw here. He had costly turnovers and certainly played his role in this defeat, but also you also have to say on the other side of it is that he wasn't put in the best position by the way that they approached the game at the beginning of the game. And I think that's, and by the defense's failings and all of that. So a lot of blame to go around. If Mike McCarthy is still the coach of this team when we're talking next week, I would be absolutely, absolutely shocked. I do want to mention right here before we move on to the Packers moving on in the playoffs, we do have one round of the playoffs finished. We still have three more weeks to make money in betting in DFS. We at Sharp Football Analysis can help you do that with our postseason package that gives you Warren Sharp's betting recommendations as well as Rich Rebar's outstanding game previews. You can use promo code POINTS for 41% off either our weekly or full postseason package. Head over to sharpfootballanalysis.com for more information, and just make sure you take advantage of it. The previews from Rich this week were great. The one game that he and I, and I'm assuming you, Curtis, from a fantasy perspective, absolutely, absolutely got wrong was this Cowboys-Packers game. I came in this game, you know, Jordan Love has been very good. Since week 12, Jordan Love has been first in EPA per dropback among all quarterbacks, qualifying quarterbacks, his 16 touchdowns, just one interception. That's how he closed the season. He had been very good. But his one bad game came against the Giants defense that does a lot of the same kind of things that Dallas had been doing when they were good. And so I came into this game expecting Jordan Love to struggle, and I was wrong, 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 wrong. Tucker, Jordan Love was outstanding in this game. He has now been outstanding for a very long time. I mean... At this point, Jordan Love's just a good quarterback, and the Packers now have yet another good quarterback. They've again made another quarterback transition that looks like it's working out for them.
Yeah, just rinse and repeat, right? I mean, this is just what the Packers do, and I just think it's really interesting when you look at Jordan Love, and you mentioned he's a good quarterback. It's just, I think it's weird when he gets compared to guys like C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young or the young quarterbacks. He's in his fourth year. Right, like he should be compared to Joe Burrow. He should be compared to Jalen Hurts. He should be compared to these guys who have been in the league as long as he has. And I know he didn't have that opportunity, and you can't fault the Packers for sitting him behind a guy who won two MVPs with him backing him up. But yeah, you look at what he's done over the last 9 or 10 weeks, and the way he's kind of carried this offense and really let them, you know, kind of blossom. I mean, he was 16-21, 270 yards, 3 touchdowns. He was in control that entire game. And for a guy who was making his first postseason start in the NFL, the moment never looked too big for him, right? Going into a game where you were that big of an underdog in a stadium where the home team hadn't lost in 16 straight games, for him to show up and, you know, basically just have control of the game from the kickoff until the end, it's as impressive as the performance we've seen in this postseason so far.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, and Curtis, you brought this up in kind of the Google Doc we have where we kind of talk about some ideas. I think that this is also a feather in the cap of Matt LaFleur, and another feather in the cap of that Shanahan, you know, coaching tree, is that we saw them make a considerable change to the way that they were playing offense, the way that they were kind of attacking in the passing game in the middle of the season, because it wasn't working early in the season. Jordan Love had some touchdowns and had some big games, but he was really inefficient. The downfield passing wasn't working. They made a change to focus a lot more on the shorter areas of the field and then take more measured deep shots. Those deep shots became much more efficient. Jordan Love became much more efficient because he's throwing to the shorter areas of the field. They were able to get Jaden Reed involved, even though Jaden Reed had no catches in this game. Thank you very much, Jaden Reed. That helped my DFS day. But they were able to, you know, they were able to kind of change their offense on the fly. LaFleur was able to play to Jordan Love's strengths. And now here we are with them going into the divisional round in a season that most thought was a rebuilding one for them.
Yeah, and you look at some of the weapons that they've done it with as well. That's been all first-year wide receivers, two rookie tight ends, and they continue to just roll. Whatever person they put on the field, they make it work. So I just hats off to Matt LaFleur on being able to change on the fly and recognize that what they were doing early on in the year, just throwing up some prayer balls and either striking a 50-yard play or going 3-and-out, wasn't going to be sustainable. And to change it on the fly like this, like it was incredible to watch. And again, they had all receivers this year with less one or less years of experience, and they had Love finished with the second most touchdown passes, finished a playoff game with a near perfect quarterback rating. It's been incredible to watch, and I think we have to start taking notice of that trend of good coaches coming out of that tree and kind of follow that a little bit.
So they do have to travel to San Francisco. They're currently 10-point underdogs. I think that coming out of this weekend, if you were picking a big winner coming out of this weekend, it might be the 49ers. Would I have much debate on that? I mean, their path, maybe the Cowboys
and the Lions, might not and the just Lions, good. I think, too.
Sure, the Lions for sure have a much cleaner path to the NFC Championship. But I think if you look at that Lions defense, and we could talk about that here in a second. We get to the Lions-Ram game. If you look at that Lions defense, I just have no faith whatsoever that Lions defense is going to be able to hold up against this 49ers offense if it's healthy and if Christian McCaffrey is healthy, which that is certainly a question that we have to answer. But I mean, I don't know how you could come out of this weekend thinking that anybody other than the 49ers going to the NFC with now getting the Packers and either the Lions or the Bucks, two teams I think they're demonstrably better than. They were already favorites to make it to the Super Bowl. They were the one seed for a reason. But I mean, Tucker, the crazy stuff happened this week. So things can happen, but I mean, their path, the 49ers path is looking very nice.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember a time where it felt like so one-sided, so lopsided in favor of the number one seed. And maybe coming off a bye week, there's a little bit of rust, or maybe you mentioned Christian McCaffrey's dealing with the calf injury, which I don't think will be a factor, but we talked about a couple weeks ago. Like, he dealt with a lot of soft tissue injuries in Carolina, and they tended to linger a lot longer than for some other guys. Like, that just might be a Christian McCaffrey thing, and it might be an issue, you know, next week against Green Bay. But yeah, I mean, we're entering a point of the postseason where San Francisco at home, I don't have the line in front of me what they're favored against.
It's 10.
And if they win that game, they're favored by probably at least a touchdown.
Should be
against Detroit or Tampa Bay in the NFC Championship game. I mean, right now, the odds of them making it back to the Super Bowl, I don't know. Even though Detroit had an emotional win, even though Green Bay looked really impressive against Dallas, I don't think anybody could pick either, you know, any of these teams to compete with San Francisco in Santa Clara the next 2 weeks.
And this is a great time to bring up that Lions-Rams game and kind of go into that. The Lions come away with the win. They win by one in a very emotional game, obviously, with Jared Goff playing his former team, Matthew Stafford coming back to town, Josh Reynolds living revenge game narrative street, Josh Reynolds was. And so it was a very emotional game. It looked like it was going to be just a 42-40 kind of game. It didn't end up that way. The defenses did, you know, I guess, stand up a little bit in the second half. But this is a big win for the Lions, a great win for the Lions, a great win for this organization. I don't want to take anything away from that. But when you look at what the Rams did to this Lions defense, the final score looks better because they limited the Rams to field goals in the red zone. But, and I say they limited, maybe Sean McVay limited the Rams to field goals in the red zone, and we can talk about that in a second. They gave up 7.7 yards per play in this game to the Rams. Over the final 5 weeks of the regular season, the Lions were 30th in yards per play allowed. Nothing about this game removes that worry of this Lions defense, and they've got a good draw now here. They get the Bucs at home. They get to play at home again this next week. They get the Bucs at home. They've got a nice little path here to the NFC Championship game. But what is the ceiling of the Lions, Curtis, if this is what their defense is going to look like?
The NFC Championship game.
That's it, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's all. I didn't do very good in the playoff drafts, pick 'em pools, but I think you can right in the 49ers moving forward. I don't think anything's gonna change there. something drastic would have to happen. And I think Brock Purdy could even throw two touchdowns and beat every one of the teams that's left in the playoffs. So until the Super Bowl. But yeah, like you said, the Lions defense is a problem, and I think that's going to get exposed, and they can't score enough points against a 49ers team to beat the 49ers. Crazier things have happened. Maybe Aiden Hutchinson can cause some chaos, but I think there is one team that could cause enough pressure to give them a 25% chance of losing, and that was the Cowboys. And, well, we're not ever going to see that.
Yeah, that didn't work out. Producer Matt has put in the chat that the NFC Championship odds, 49ers minus 185, rightfully so. Lions plus 330, Buccaneers plus 950, Packers plus 950. That tells you all you need to know about who Vegas expects to play in the NFC Championship game next week. I think we should talk about Sean McVay. Tucker, is he ever just going to learn how to manage games and not waste timeouts and when to go for it on fourth down and not leave his teams in these positions? I don't know. He's obviously a very, very good coach. This continues to just affect his teams.
It felt like he's what held back the Rams offense, right? And it felt like that watching the second half where they were finally, you know, gaining traction, and it felt like they were coming back, and their defense played well in the second half. They only allowed 3 points to the Lions, but it just felt offensively like he was the one holding them back, not the defense of the Lions. So you mentioned gave up 7.7 yards per play. Puka Nacua had 181 yards receiving, which set a rookie record. And just felt like every time they got in the red zone and they had a chance to, you know, put their foot on the gas pedal and really try to, you know, make their mark and, you know, get back into it, they pulled back and they settled for field goals, and they settled for, you know, just really weird play calls, a lot of, you know, fades to Cooper Kupp in the end zone that I just don't necessarily love. And I mean, this is a guy who's won a Super Bowl, who has coached in, you know, the biggest games, and in one of them, he had a guy in Cooper Kupp who had an unbelievable game, and another one, his offense put up 3 points, although maybe it's because Brandon Cooks dropped a couple touchdowns. But at this point, when you look at Sean McVay and what he's done, I don't think there's any doubt. You know, he's a fantastic schemer. He's great at play calling. His offenses consistently deliver. I thought this year might have been his best coaching job from start to finish based on what we thought this Rams team could be in the preseason. I look at what he's done now and you wonder, can he coach and win in a big game? Even though he already has, I don't know if he can do it again, which is weird to say, but I don't know. After 7 years of this, it's clear that this is just who this guy is.
Yeah. You said you had a stat for it, Tucker. I mean, sorry, Curtis.
Yeah. So when I go check it out for the full season this year on how often teams should go for it on fourth down, he finished only ahead of Dennis Allen, Bill Belichick, the Texans, and the Bengals. So all defensive-minded coaches. And it's just hard to see how he can be such a great mind offensively and then just not understand and trust his own system. A lot of times, like, Dan Campbell goes for it on fourth down because he trusts his team. He wants to put the ball in his own players' hands, and he does it. And it's just so hard that Sean McVay can be so offensively creative and smart and then just continuously just take the old 3 points because Troy Aikman says take the points. So it's hard to understand why he hasn't really evolved. Even Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan have changed their ways a bit over the last 2 years. I know they used to be very conservative as well, but they've added a new layer in there.
Yeah, it is confusing. Like, that, it's hard to rectify those two things, right? Is that how can Sean McVay be kind of like at the forefront of offensive coaching and then also not settle for 3 field goals of 30 yards or fewer in a playoff game and then lose that game by one? Like, how can that be what we see from him? And it is tricky. I'm not going to go as far as Tucker and say he can't win another big game. I mean, he's obviously a very good coach, but this is an Achilles heel for him. That's pretty clear. It has been one. It has failed him in the past, and yet he still continues to do this. And that, like, at that point, that's just kind of who you are. All of that said, this was unquestionably a successful season for the Rams. They found 2 young stars on offense. They finally have some resources, some cap space to improve the defense and the offensive line. They found some young players on defense, and they're going to be able to kind of add to that. And so this was unquestionably a good season for the Rams. And so I don't want to just it all be negative, but it's just when you keep having the same thing happen, it's kind of frustrating. And I imagine it's doubly so for Rams fans. We had another game on Monday, a game that was supposed to be on Sunday, but we got to play it on Monday. Thank you, Mother Nature. And that was the Bills and the Steelers. The Bills end up winning this game 31-17. It did kind of get a little oddly close in the middle part. It looked like the Bills were going to run away from this game. Then they kind of just let the Steelers come back around. The Steelers do what the Steelers do. And, you know, it kind of got a little close. And I thought about kind of comparing this game to the Packers. And when the Packers were up on the Cowboys, and to be fair, they were underdogs and maybe they thought they needed to do this, they kept their foot on the gas. They kept going. They kept pushing that lead out. And the Bills didn't really do that. I mean, Josh Allen was 21 of 30, but he only had 30 pass attempts in this one, 203 yards and 3 touchdowns. Like, let him throw, let him put this game away. I'm just, the Bills continue to be a team that for some reason likes to play in these close games. And that means it can go either way. And I don't know. They have an interesting game this next week against the Chiefs, Tucker, but I think this Bills team is the second best team in the AFC. And I would be very interested in watching them play the Ravens, but I don't know if they're going to be able to get out of their own way.
No, and they just feel like a team that likes to play with their food. It's confounding because, like you, like I was watching the game. They went up 21-0 after that long Josh Allen run. It felt like, oh, that's it. And then even just not really having both eyes on the game was like, wait a minute, it was a one touchdown game. It was a 7-point game with like 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter until Shakir had that run at the end to really put it away. But I mean, this upcoming game, them getting to host Patrick Mahomes in his first road playoff game of his career, you know, Josh Allen and Sean McDermott going against a team that has really stood in their way their entire careers. I mean, it's weird to say this about a divisional game, but like, this is the Super Bowl for the Buffalo Bills, right? Like, this is the game that you've never been able to win in your career. And for them, I think you're going to get a heavily motivated team. And maybe for a team that tends to lack focus when they get up big, you're not going to see that this week. I think this is a game that they're really, really interested in winning. And like you, I think they are the second best team in the AFC when they put things together and play well. We just don't really see it all that often, especially for 60 minutes.
Yeah, and I mean, the other side of it is you do have to mention that they continue to have injury issues on defense. Yeah. I mean, they had, outside of the defensive line, from the defensive line back, they had backups at every position by the end of this game. This continues to be a problem for them. Part of the reason the Steelers started to find some success in the passing game was that their linebackers, these backup linebackers, just couldn't tackle and they were giving up yards after the catch. And so there's certainly part of that that played in this game getting closer. But it is also still a trend for this team. And so, yeah, they have a great opportunity here at home against the Chiefs team that they just beat a few weeks ago in Kansas City. And so if I'm remembering correctly, I'm pretty sure that game was in Kansas City. And so they have a great opportunity here to get to the AFC Championship game and kind of, like you said, really put that kind of Mahomes standing in their way, put that behind them and kind of get in a good situation. I want to talk a little bit, Curtis, about the other side of it. The Steelers, if they're, you know, they overachieved for sure this season, making it to the playoffs. They did what Mike Tomlin teams always do, overachieve, somehow make the playoffs, somehow go 500, and then, you know, kind of losing the first round. They're in quarterback hell. Like, they have no good quarterback situation. Mike Tomlin was asked about his future after the game, and he walked off the stage before the reporter could even finish the question. The Steelers are, you know, they made the playoffs. They had a good season. They're in a really odd spot heading into the offseason, Curtis.
Yeah, they are in a very odd spot, and it's will ownership allow them to go outside and look for a different quarterback? I don't know. I think that's Kenny Pickett is the owner's guy. I think it would be hard to see them move on from him, but I would love to see them interested in a guy like Justin Fields. I think Chicago would prefer sending him across conference rather than within the conference to someone like the Atlanta Falcons, who could use a quarterback like that. Do they go after a guy like Russell Wilson, who's probably looking for a new home? I you just can't. Kenny Pickett isn't the guy. I think we saw that today when they opted to play Mason Rudolph over him, who is not the guy either. But they have a problem, and they have a problem too where they just want to run the ball on first down every single time. Like that game started, they were down 14 points, and Najee Harris touched the ball on first down every single play until they're down two touchdowns. And they need a little bit of a philosophy change. Can Tomlin find a creative offensive mind? That would be cool to see him stay there, because obviously what he's done there over the past has been incredible. And you don't want to see a guy like that leave on terms like this. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I still have a lot of respect for Mike Tomlin, how he gets his team to play for some of these games where they have no business winning. Like him and Mike Vrabel, if they're underdogs, you just can't bet against them because they find a way to stay in games they shouldn't.
That would actually be really fun if Tomlin leaves and then Vrabel's suddenly the Steelers coach, and we're right into the exact same thing. I mean, with Kenny Pickett, I mean, maybe ownership has his back. First of all, I have to say, as a Penn State fan, Sean Clifford got to play in a playoff game before Kenny Pickett, and so that's really fun for me. But the other part of it is that, you know, even if the ownership is like really in on Kenny Pickett, when you don't play a healthy Kenny Pickett because you want to start Mason Rudolph in a playoff game, that's the end. Like, that's the end of the relationship, I think. I don't know how you come back from that. Maybe the way you come back from that is Mike Tomlin's not with the team anymore. I'm not sure. But that's a pretty damning kind of thing for them. We mentioned that the Bills get to play the Chiefs. The Chiefs got beat out the Dolphins on Saturday night in a game that was unbelievably cold. Like, some of the videos that we saw, some of the pictures we saw coming out of that game, I'm not sure how they played, how they even played it. The Dolphins really didn't play it. They scored 7 points on a long Tyreek Hill catch, and, you know, that was about it. It looked like Tua had 19 layers of clothes on. He was certainly not happy about being out there in that weather. I think some of the more interesting things to take out of this game is about the Chiefs offense. We saw this. Andy Reid mentioned this late in the season, and we saw this develop. But if you look at their offense, they had 24 carries for Isaiah Pacheco. They had 22 targets to Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice, and that's it. Those are their three good skill players. They know that. That's who they're going to go to. I don't know, though, Tucker, is that enough for them to keep up with the Bills, or if they're able to beat the Bills, keep up with the Ravens' offense? I mean, their defense is good, but I'm not sure that that formula is going to be enough for them to get where they want to go.
No, and it's kind of interesting because it's almost the opposite of what Andy Reid has instructed his quarterbacks to do throughout his career, right? Like Patrick Mahomes was pretty famous for throwing to 10 different wide receivers in a game. Donovan McNabb did the same thing when Andy Reid was here in Philadelphia. So to see them kind of shrink it down to, hey, we're giving the ball to three guys and no one else is allowed to touch it, it is a pretty big abandonment, you know, from his career-long philosophy. But, I mean, the biggest issue for the team is just the red zone offense, right? They went 2 for 6. In the red zone against Miami. And for someone like Reed, who is creative, and you have guys like, you know, Kelce and Pacheco who can win one-on-one matchups and make guys miss in the red zone, that's the worrisome thing. Like, they still move the ball relatively successfully against Miami up and down the field, but they got in the red zone 6 times and they settled for 4 field goals. And that was enough on a cold night where Miami's offense really didn't want to be there. I'm Tua Tagovailoa, who, even though he isn't from Miami, he's from Hawaii, which, you know, doesn't get a lot of sub-zero days, I imagine. So I'm sure he wasn't necessarily comfortable there as well. It was so cold that Patrick Mahomes' helmet shattered on impact, which is something I've never seen. But moving forward, if this team doesn't figure out how to either score with explosive plays, which is something they haven't really been able to do all season, they have to figure out how to score in the red zone. And that's something that I think is really their biggest concern moving forward against teams who will be able to score on their defense, you know, more than the 7 points Miami mustered on Sunday or Saturday.
I want to be clear also that I'm not taking a shot at Tua about his clothing attire. I am from South Texas, where it is currently as cold as it gets in South Texas. The high today was something like 25 degrees. And you would think that we are on the ice planet Hoth. Based on the clothing you see when you go out and about to the grocery store or wherever you go, people are losing their minds. They're in full ski parkas and snow boots out on a ground that is completely dry. So I understand if you have not lived in those environments, I understand why you would be bundled up the way that Tua was. We're look going forward. The Chiefs are 2.5-point underdogs in Buffalo next week. AFC Championship odds as they stand: Ravens +120, Bills +245, Chiefs +290, and then Texans +1,000. We'll get to the Texans here in a second. I do want to kind of do a postmortem here on the Dolphins and kind of how we view their season, Curtis. Like, on the one hand, they made it to the playoffs. For a long time, they were the 2 seed. They looked like they had a chance for the 1 seed. They had a bunch of injuries at the end that you can kind of explain away. On the other hand, they didn't really beat anyone good except for the Cowboys, and now we don't even know if the Cowboys were good. And so it's how do we view this season, Curtis?
Yeah, it's tough. They came out and had the most explosive offense we've seen through the first 6 weeks. And then all sorts of craziness happened. They just had their offensive line. At one point, I don't think they had a single starter from the beginning of the season on the offensive line. And they kind of figured a way around that, although the Tua still couldn't handle pressure. So that was obviously a big drawback. And then they started having defensive injuries. Every single key defensive player in the last month basically got hurt, and they were down to Jalen Ramsey. And it's just sad to see, because I think they did have a ceiling that could compete with the Ravens if they were at full health, but we won't get to see that. I still believe in Mike McDaniel. I think that team is on the right path, but I think it's a successful season. But this is now the second year in a row where they've had just the craziest cluster injuries right before the playoffs. So, and they did lose to the defending Super Bowl champions as well, who still have a chance to beat the Bills next week to make Patrick Mahomes' fifth straight AFC championship game, sixth straight, something like that. I'm not writing off the Chiefs yet.
No, absolutely not. They're 2.5-point underdogs. Yeah. I mean, that on the road, that is very clearly, this is a coin flip kind of game. And it was a coin flip kind of game when the Chiefs and Bills played the last time. And so I definitely think that this is within the realm of possibilities, especially, you know, what we continue to see from the Bills. The injuries part of that is interesting. We have seen teams that are just like this, Tucker, and I know you pay attention to the injuries, where they just continually, year after year, have injury issues. The Chargers come to mind. Is that the kind of thing, do you think this has just been bad luck for the Dolphins 2 years in a row? Or is this the kind of thing that maybe there's something in their system, the way that they approach practice or strength and conditioning, that maybe has kind of led to this?
No, I think it might just be bad luck. And I hate to attribute things to luck, because that's not necessarily good analysis. But I mean, this is a team that entered this week with like 2 healthy edge rushers, right? They had to sign Bruce Irvin and Malik Reed off the street. Just to, you know, fill out their 53-man roster heading into the week. I mean, they had nobody, and I don't know what kind of strength and conditioning or practice regimen or anything can just keep you guys from Achilles snapping, right? Like, that's going to happen. It's going to happen. It'd be one thing if they're dealing with lots of soft tissue injuries, if they're dealing with lots of, you know, fatigue-related injuries, things like that. But when it's tendons, when it's things like that, like, I just don't know what you can do. Like, things like that tend to me, they seem like just bad luck. And for Miami, I mean, it was different players than it was a year ago, right? Like, last year they went in with a third string quarterback starting in the postseason against Buffalo and still almost won. But you are right. I mean, they feel like a team that, you look at the resume on paper over the last 2 years, and it seems like they're building something and they're starting to figure things out. But 2 years in a row where they ended the postseason pretty prematurely, based on what we thought, you know, 5 weeks in or 6 weeks in, I don't really know where this team goes. Because if you look on paper, when healthy, they probably belong among, you know, the top 4 teams in the AFC. Like, they should be playing this week had they have everybody ready and you know, good to go.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, this defense, when it was healthy with Vic Fangio, was a good defense. And so that can help kind of alleviate some of these concerns you have about the offensive line and stuff like that. And I mean, here's the thing. There might not be any really good teams this year except for the Ravens and the 49ers. And so the Dolphins certainly could have been in this conversation. But I do think it's interesting now that we're kind of here into another season of questioning whether this team can punch up, questioning whether this team can really compete with these. And the only way the Dolphins are going to end these questions is by doing it. Next season coming out, and doing it. And so we'll just have to see, you know, kind of where we go. The last game to talk about here was actually the first game of the wild card weekend, our Saturday Kings. They had to play on Saturday again. If you want to watch a Texans playoff game, the good chances are it's going to be on a Saturday. And that is the Texans who routed the Browns. CJ Stroud had a great game, again, on limited passing attempts. Joe Flacco threw two pick sixes. The real Joe Flacco kind of showed back up, and the Texans were able to win, and they set up a matchup with the number one seed Ravens next week in Baltimore on Saturday. They are 9.5-point underdogs for that game. So it's going to be a rough situation. However, this is a really good win, Curtis, for the Texans, and another really good performance from CJ Stroud, who is kind of staking his case here. And I haven't done the legwork. I haven't gone back through every rookie quarterback season that has ever happened. But like, we're talking about, if not the best, one of the best rookie quarterback seasons that we've ever seen here from CJ Stroud, who, by the way, went number two in the draft.
Yeah, I think we can just proclaim it that because he went second overall. I think we can look it compared to his peer that went number one overall. But yeah, I did not see this game coming against the Cleveland defense. So you can talk about the Cleveland road and home splits all you want, but I did not see them coming out and actually trusting Stroud to throw the ball, and they did early, and he even had to Dalton Schultz dropped a for sure touchdown early in the game, and he didn't get fazed by that and just came out and kept chucking, and they absolutely looked great. And I know my playoff pools. I didn't think that was going to happen, going to be the case. And yeah, proves me wrong again. And thank goodness there's a second chance in some of those playoff pools. But he's had a great season. And I don't think the defense is going to do him any favors against Lamar Jackson. But how can you bet against this kid now? We've been betting against him all since he was drafted number two, and he just continues to prove he is unreal. And yeah, I think it is probably one of the best rookie seasons we've ever had. I don't remember how far Robert Griffin got, or he got hurt in his first playoff game. So
yeah, so he's on that list. Herbert's on that list. Cam Newton's kind of on that list because of his rushing, but he didn't have a great passing season. Yeah, and that's in recent memory. Obviously, we'd have to go further back. There have been some good ones, but this is right up there. And I don't know who this we've been betting against him in. CJ Stroud is the quarterback.
The general of public of sentiment. Sorry. Yeah, fantasy crowd until about week three, and then yeah, the fact that he went second overall, I didn't have him as a favorite this week.
Yeah, CJ Stroud was. I like of all the things, and you know, sometimes we get things wrong and we get things right. And I like to talk about the things I get right. I mean, wrong more than the things I get right, because that's more fun for me. But we were dead on CJ Stroud and confused why he wasn't the number one pick. And we're kind of anointed him easy. You can go back in the Sharp Football Analysis and look at an article we wrote about CJ Stroud, like way back in like week five or six, something like that.
Yeah.
He has definitely lived up to what we thought he could be, and that trade that the Panthers made.
Here's a question. CJ Stroud or Joe Burrow? Moving forward.
Joe Burrow.
That's how good of a season he's at. He's now got his name, people thinking about that.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is still Joe Burrow, because you know we've just seen it for longer and seen kind of more success. But yeah, I mean, he's been that good. We have another entry into the best rookie quarterbacks here from producer Matt. Russell Wilson in 2012, who had a pretty good season there. 3,100 yards, 26 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, a lot of rushing yards. They didn't ask him to throw that much that year. He started all 16 games and threw 393 times. That was obviously during the Legion of Boom, times. So there you go. But yeah, a lot of good rookie quarterbacks. I think Stroud has been on that list for sure. For the Browns, all right, I don't know which one of you heckled me in the Google Doc, but I put in there, you know, what do the Browns do at quarterback moving forward? And fair enough, the answer is they play CJ, they play, excuse me, Deshaun Watson, because they have no other choice but to play Deshaun Watson. At best, if they cut him, he would cost, it would cutting him would cost them at best $92 million in cap space. The expected salary cap next year is only $242.5 million. That is not going to happen. He is going to be the quarterback. Stefanski has already said so. I should have worded this better. My question is, like, where are the Browns with this situation, with Watson having to be quarterback? Because we saw Joe Flacco come in and make the offense look better than it looked at any point with Deshaun Watson since he's been in Cleveland. The Browns average 5.1 yards per play with Watson on the field this season, 5.8 yards per play with Flacco. That's the difference between the 20th ranked offense and yards per play this season and the 5th ranked offense and yards per play. There was a marked difference with Joe Flacco. I mean, there's a couple players on defense that the Browns could lose because of free agency and kind of their cap situation, thanks in a large part to Deshaun Watson's contract. But this roster is built to win now. We know that. We've seen it. They are good enough to win right now. And based on what we've seen from Watson over his admittedly short kind of run with the Browns, thanks to, you know, suspension and injury, Tucker, I just don't think that Watson is that quarterback. And that puts them basically in purgatory unless Watson suddenly comes back next year and is a lot closer to what he was in Houston.
Yeah, as someone who, you know, had tickets for the Browns at 50-1 to win the Super Bowl and had Myles Garrett at 500-1 to win Super Bowl MVP, you know, Saturday's loss was certainly devastating for me and my futures market. But yeah, I mean, Deshaun Watson's just kind of like a $200 million albatross on this team right now. And unless he figures it out, I don't really know what they can do. And I was really high on the Browns defense heading into this game. I failed to really recognize how terrible they've been on the road this season. You kind of look at what they've done on the road versus at home in Cleveland. Their defense been pretty terrible on the road. They gave up 31 to Jake Browning in week 18. They gave up 38 to the Colts in week 7. They gave up 31 to the Ravens, 36 to the Rams. I mean, they were pretty terrible away from home, considering they were, you know, maybe the best unit at home, you know, on defense. But until they figure out what they're doing at quarterback, and, you know, they should get Nick Chubb back next year. And that should help their offense tremendously, because I still think he's their best, you know, offensive skill player, even though Amari Cooper had a pretty good season. I just don't know what you do. Like, can you just bring Joe Flacco back and, like, have him in waiting? Do you start P.J. Walker from week one knowing that he was probably the most talented quarterback you had on the team? I mean, you look at, you know, where you've been. Even though Deshaun Watson went 5-1 as the team starter, I don't think anybody really has confidence in him being the guy he was in 2019 when he was 25 and everyone thought, wow, you know, this is going to be the guy who can be, you know, a face of a franchise, maybe the face of the NFL for, you know, a decade. He looks like a shell of himself. He doesn't look like the guy we saw in Houston.
Yeah. I think the important thing this year is they now realize Kevin Stefanski is the dude. Look at what he did with this team. They're missing Nick Chubb, both offensive tackles. They had to find Joe Flacco off the couch, and they still made it to the playoffs. And I don't think in any other year you can go back and look and you see the Browns and they would find ways to probably win zero games this year. And they still put a winning record together. Kevin Stefanski is a really good coach. He's won Coach of the Year. Like, he was in the hot seat at some point in time because of the Deshaun Watson thing. He did go 5-1 with Deshaun Watson. I think the Browns will be okay because they have a coach that can figure out how to win with what he has. Things didn't go well for them, and he just kind of – he got a game plan, and he figured it out. Joe Flacco, he's going to turn the ball over, but he made enough good plays and aggressive plays to kind of hide that fact. And, well, no one can really win with P.J. Walker, so I guess that's – That was the losing stretch there for during the middle of the year. Is Deshaun Watson going to be what he was in Houston? Probably not, because I don't think he can read the game. It's kind of like the Russell Wilson thing. The game has changed since they were really elite, and I don't think he reads the game as well. But I think the head coach can find a way to just kind of hide him enough till they can get that contract off the books at a more reasonable number. And is that 1 year? Is that 2 years? He's definitely going to be there next year, and I probably at least 2 more years. Guaranteed contract.
It's not great. I'm really interested in the listeners who haven't been with us all season, who have no idea what this PJ Walker bit is.
Not a bit.
We have a Temple grad, I believe, in our midst who is going to defend PJ Walker to the end. But yeah, I mean, they're stuck. They have nothing to do. I do think the Nick Chubb point is really important, because Nick Chubb, when healthy, that was a really bad injury. We'll have to see when he comes back. Nick Chubb, when healthy, is a one-man offense. He is the best pure running back in the league. I stand by that. We saw what happened to all of the running numbers in Cleveland, how much better he makes an offensive line look because of his ability to find the hole, to hit the hole, to make yards for himself. We saw how inefficient the Browns running game was without him. And you mentioned they had offensive line injuries. It wasn't just the tackles. They had offensive lines, you know, throughout. Betonio like had to dismiss rumors he was going to retire based on all the injuries that he had. And so they had injuries on the offensive line for sure. But Nick Chubb is the driving force of this offense when healthy. Because I love watching him play, and I think he's one of the best running backs I've ever seen, like, honestly, from a just a pure running perspective. I'm really happy and excited to see him come back healthy, and hope that he comes back healthy. And if he does, this is a different offense. And so maybe that's what we're going to see. Maybe that's the next step for this team. It's just Nick Chubb being healthy. Do you remember, Tucker, what exactly the injury was? Because it wasn't great. Was it ACL and MCL? Is that that's for some reason ringing a bell?
Yeah, it was both.
Yeah, it wasn't just the ACL.
It's tough, but we're hoping for the best. I love you, Nick Chubb. You are my favorite. All right, Super Bowl championship odds as we stand right now, recording this on late on Monday night, early Tuesday morning in some parts of the world. We have the 49ers plus 175, Ravens plus 290, Bills plus 500, Chiefs plus 700, Lions plus 900, Texans plus 2200, Packers plus 2200. Still no respect. No respect for the Packers and the Texans. I think that's probably fair there. I don't know. Bills plus 500. This Bills team, if this Bills team beat any other, and the Bucks plus 2500, that came out late. Thank you, Matt. Bucks plus 2500. If this Bills team beat any other team, I'd be like, sure. If they lost any other team, I'd be like, sure. So why not? Plus 500, take a shot, see what happens. Y'all like any of those odds? Any of them stand out?
I agree with you. I think the Bills are just, I feel like every week we talk about it, they're just such a high variance team that if they can figure things out for the next 2 or 3 weeks, they can hang with anybody. And we kind of got the full Josh Allen experience today, where he's a big play waiting to happen anytime he has the ball in his hands, whether that's running or throwing or avoiding the blitz. I mean, he's as dynamic as any quarterback in the NFL, but he also makes enough mistakes to keep the opposing team in the game.
Yeah, that's it. That's where we are, right, Curtis? Do you like anybody else? Anybody other than the Bills that you really like there as a bet?
Oh, I don't like the Bills. I'm a Bills stater.
We almost got it in.
Come on. The 49ers at plus 170, I'm probably making that bet now and just buying back the AFC team once the Super Bowl comes. It just seems like too high of odds for a team that probably going to sleepwalk their way to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point.
To the Lions fans, I apologize.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good point. Like, we are this convinced that the 49ers are going to make the Super Bowl, first of all, you just bet on them to win the NFC. You're going to get actually, the odds are worse. Yeah, if you're this convinced that the 49ers are going to make the Super Bowl, then you make this bet. They're definitely not going to be plus 175 on the money line with whomever they play in the Super Bowl. So I think you're right. I think that might be a good path as well. All right, that's it for us. We'll be back after all the games are finished next week in the divisional round to talk about everything we see there. Now that we've been this kind of certain about the 49ers, I assume we'll be talking about the Packers somehow beating the 49ers, Brock Purdy throwing 6 interceptions and us getting there. You can join us live as soon as the games are over next week on YouTube. Go and check that out. Remember that our playoff packages, we have a sale running 41% off either our weekly or full postseason package using the promo code POINTS. So make sure you go and check that out at sharpfootballanalysis.com. For Tucker and Curtis, I'm Ray. We'll be back next week. Come join us then.